Good morning, my brothers and sisters. How are you today? You're woo and good and excellent. It's a good review. The ushers are going to come forward as we do every week. If you came prepared to partner financially, there's lots of ways of partnering with this community. Financially would be one of those. If you came prepared to do that, the ushers are going to pass around this really cool bag with handles on it. It's one of the ways that we entrust our interests to each other and to God to say, hey, more than just ideas, more than concepts, we want our actual interests. We want our actual resources to be lent or given over to each other and to God, so that he can do in and through us what he's seeking to do. So that's what that's about. While they do that, we're going to dive right into today's part of the series that we've been. I don't know how long we've been in this series. I think this fourth or fifth week. Better living through stealing. You should never steal except for when you have to. And stealing from people in terms of from their experiences is one of the main ways that we learn wisdom. Jesus says, I've come that you would have life. Have it to the full. One of the main reasons Jesus came was so that you could have a better life than you could ever get for yourself or ever imagine for yourself. Well, one of the ways that that happens is that you would grow in wisdom. It wouldn't just be a succession of fun times, but you would actually grow and develop, that your mind would be transformed, the renewal of your thinking, wisdom. And a lot of us, very stubbornly, it feels strong, but it's not necessarily strong. We say, well, I've got to learn it for myself. And oftentimes, that's a good definition of foolishness. And so this series is about looking at specific people in the scriptures so we can look at their life and say, ooh, I want to replicate that. I want some of that in my life. Obviously, I got to adapt it to my context and my modern circumstances, but there are some principles that I can glean from this person. Sometimes it's, hey, I don't want to do that. This person stepped in something and I am not going to follow him into that, and I want to avoid that. That's wisdom that we would take from other people's experience, that we would learn from the people around us, even the people that precede us. And so this series is about looking at specific people in the scriptures, and today we're going to talk about a guy that many of you have never heard of. He gets just a couple of mentions. We know almost nothing about the guy, but nonetheless, I think there's something very important that we can glean from him. He runs with Paul, the Apostle Paul. His name was Saul. He was a Jew. He persecuted Christians, and then he became one, and then he has these people that travel with him in the New Testament. And what Paul is doing is he starts with the Jewish synagogue. So go into a town and go straight to the synagogue and go, hey, I've got really good news. The person you're waiting for, Moshiach, the Messiah, the Christ, he came. He's here. Now, it was obscure. He was a peasant carpenter from Nazareth, but he lived and he healed and he taught, and then he was wrongly murdered. Wrong. Is that redundant? Can you be rightly murdered? He was killed, not for his sins, but for everybody else's. And then 3 days later, he resurrected and he continued to teach and inspire. And his spirit actually moves among us. And you, my Jewish brothers and sisters, have been invited to participate in what you've been anticipating for millennia. He has come. Messiah is here. So that's what he does when he goes to town. He starts in a synagogue. And then to everybody else, Gentiles, which is everybody that isn't Jewish, he goes to them and says, I've got really good news, and you didn't even know you were waiting for good news. At the center of the universe, there is love for you. Boundless love for you. See, at the center of the universe, there isn't something that doesn't care about you. There isn't just an idea. The center of the universe, turns out, isn't you. Not you surviving and treating people like competitors or people who are extras in your movie that either carry your story forward or get in your way and must be overcome. No, no, no. At the center of the universe, there is love for you. And on no merits of your own, it's been given to you exclusively through this man named Jesus. So Paul goes and telling Jews and Gentiles that, hey, I had it wrong too, but now I know. And he goes from town to town to town telling people the good news, the gospel of the kingdom. So he's got people that run with him. So he writes letters to some of the people that he's run with previously, and it's from him and the people that are running with him in that moment back to other churches that he's founded or visited or encouraged or whatever. And most of the New Testament is Paul doing exactly that, writing these letters to churches. And so he mentions somebody at the end while he's signing off to his letter to the Colossians. In chapter 4, verse 14, it reads, our dear friend Luke, the doctor, and Demas send greetings. Luke, you might have an easier time recognizing. Luke wrote Luke, the Gospel of Luke, and also most, if not all, of the book of Acts. And so in Luke, a lot of us like Luke because he thinks more like we do. As a Greek-trained doctor, he seems to have more of a Western mindset. He seems to speak our language a little bit better than the other three that seem to be more Eastern-minded. They're all of equal value, but some of us have an easier time apprehending mentally where Luke goes with some of his ideas. This is Luke, the beloved physician. Oh, and then Demas is here with me too. They send their greetings, and then he hits send. Then it mentions it again at the end of Philemon. It's a little short letter, one chapter long. The 24th verse reads this way. Hey, peace to everybody from us. We're all saying this as to Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, and Luke, my fellow workers. These aren't just buddies or acquaintances. These are people that Paul has his arms linked with. These are people that in the evening, after a hard day's work, they trade notes, they eat together, they go and find an inn together, wake up, rinse, repeat, and continue to do this thing. This is a family. Luke is there. Demas is there. Then something happens. And Paul gets to the end of his life, and a lot of his letters are written from prison cells. A lot of his letters he has to dictate through bars. Some of the letters he even says, hey, I'm writing this one with my own hand. But he's in prison so often. Well, a lot of people think that 2 Timothy is the last thing he composed before he was killed, before he died under Rome's power. And so he's saying some things like, hey, I'm being poured out like a drink offering. This is it. I'm done. I'm not leaving this one. I'm not getting out of this one. And so he's got some closing thoughts, not just in the letter, but closing thoughts. And here's one of the last things he says in the last chapter of the last thing he writes. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 9. Timothy, do your best to come to me quickly. For Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Then he lists off some other people that have also left. But Demas, out of his love for this world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. The word translated deserted is the same word Jesus cries from the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? Paul says, Demas has ditched me. He has left me in a lurch. He has left me to rot and die in this prison cell. Get here quick. I am basically out of time. Now, what in the world happened? What did Demas do? What was Demas's perspective on what had happened? I mean, he's left the apostle Paul in a prison cell. What in the world made Demas go to Thessalonica? Well, there have been quite a few sermons and devotionals and notes in your Bibles written, and lots of things said from people in my profession about Demas. I'm telling you, those are the three statements that are made about Demas, and yet here are some excerpts from other sermons. This was all collected for me in one particular blog I happened to come across, and here are some of the things that have been said in other sermons. The third time Paul mentioned Demas was his remorseful announcement to Timothy that Demas had decided to defect, taking sides with the enemy. There is no neutral ground in the battle of righteousness versus evil. If you're an enemy of righteousness, it simply means you've joined forces with the devil. This would be, if you're not sure what the word speculation means, this is a great example. Here's another excerpt, different sermon. Is it possible that Demas went to Thessalonica for other reasons than this awful place below the city? Maybe. But the fact that this underground system of brothels was mainly what that city was known for is a good reason it must figure prominently in our conclusions. It was the hookers. Now, this person has the same three verses I just read you. Here's another one. Throughout Scripture, we find examples of those who profess Christ but later turn out to not be saved. One example is Demas. Like, am I missing part of my Bible? Not saved. This would be the epitome of speculation. But let's not forget the fact that Paul in the prison cell, he's obviously very hurt. He doesn't say, yeah, Demas had to go, you know, he ran some errands and he's not back yet, he's a little bit late. He's ditched me. He has forsaken me. I'm hurt by this. What in the world did make Demas ditch St. Paul? It's the Apostle Paul. What happened? Well, a couple of things. Context is always important. Context means a lot of things. One of them is the actual language that we're talking about. We're reading this in English, and you can trust English, but to really dig on things like this, it helps unfold some of the ideas that you bump up against and you're not sure what to do with. The original language here is Greek. It's translated into English, but the original language is Greek. And the actual word translated world is the word aeon, which, like eon, it's a period of time. But it's also used to talk about the way things are, the systems, the elements that are in place. So rather than saying, oh, Demas's problem is he loved the world, because some of you are like, wait, people hold up that sign at monster truck rallies, John 3:16, God loved the world. Isn't loving the world special and good? Why, when Demas does it, is it bad? Because the word is actually aeon. What Paul is probably saying, more than having loved the world, he ditched me, is Demas likes the way things are rather than how they could be in the way of Christ. Demas, out of a love, out of a preference for going back to how things are, or how they were, despite how they could be, he went to Thessalonica. Demas goes to Thessalonica because he decided to prioritize something else. So he goes there. Now, it's interesting if you look at a little bit of the history of Thessalonica. It's an interesting city. It's a very old city. It's the capital city of Macedonia. It's named after Alexander the Great's sister. So it's a huge, hugely influential city that hundreds of years before the time of Christ, you find in some scholarly circles, they talk about that Jewish artisans were actually borrowed from King Ptolemy from Egypt. They were borrowed to actually influence the architecture and the artistry of the town. So there's a Jewish presence in this town, and there's a synagogue in this gigantic capital port city. So the town's known for lots of things. All towns are known for lots of things. Thessalonica, you know, oh, it had brothels. All the towns had a brothel or two. But this town is also known for having a Jewish contingent within its town and had for a long time. There's a synagogue there. And so there's a couple things that I think are interesting to learn about Thessalonica, and you can learn them from the scriptures when Paul first encounters this town. If you have a Bible, I'm just going to read this to you. The text will not be on the screen, but if you have a Bible, turn to the fifth book of the New Testament, book of Acts, chapter 17, and it details this specific season. It says, now when they, Paul and his companions, verse 1, had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews. And Paul went in, as was his custom, for three Sabbath days, reasoned with them in the synagogue from the scriptures. Reasoned is dialegomai. They're talking. He's not shouting at them. They're having a discussion about it. He's reasoning from the scriptures, explaining and proving that it was necessary for the Messiah, Christ, to suffer, to rise from the dead. And he said, this Jesus that I'm proclaiming to you is the Christ. And some of them were persuaded, and they joined Paul and Silas, as did a great number of devout Greeks. The actual terminology here is God-fearers. That's what they called Greeks that became Jews. They weren't born Jewish, but they decided, I want to follow the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so a lot of them are realizing, hey, this is who we've been waiting for. And so many of the devout Greeks, and not a few of the leading women. But the Jewish leaders were jealous, and taking some wicked men of the rabble, they formed a mob, set the city in an uproar, and attacked the house of Jason where they were meeting, seeking to bring them out to the crowd. And when they could not find them, they dragged Jason and some of the brothers before the city authorities, shouting, these men who have turned the world upside down have come here also. The language here translated turn the world upside down is to stir up and agitate like you would a very calm bee's hive. You just go up and shake it. They've stirred up the whole world, and now they're here doing the same thing. And Jason has received them, and they're all acting against, now get this, these are Jewish religious leaders. And they're acting against the decrees of Caesar, saying that there's another king, Jesus. This is a Jewish group of men, maybe men and women, saying they have the audacity to say that there's another ruler other than Caesar. I mean, they're supposed to be the ones saying that. They've gotten very comfortable with the way that things are. The people and the city authorities were disturbed when they heard these things, and Jason literally had to pay to get out of this. He had to pay money. A lot of influence that these people had. Verse 10, the brothers immediately sent Paul and Silas away by night to Berea. So they got chased out of town. Now they're miles away in another town in Berea. And when they arrived, they went into the Jewish synagogue. Now these Jews were more noble-minded than those in Thessalonica, because they received the message with eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see if these things were so. So they didn't just roll over, they didn't just swallow it, and they didn't just say, hey, we've never heard that before, it can't be true. They said, oh, cool, let's wrestle with this. Over the next coming days, let's get together and discuss this and read from the scriptures and have an intellectual conversation. And Luke says, these people were way more noble-minded. This was a better group of people to work with. Many of them therefore believed, not a few Greek women of high standing as well as men. Notice the order of gender there. But when the Jews from Thessalonica learned that the word of God was being proclaimed by Paul at Berea also, they came there too, agitating and stirring up the crowds. And if you keep reading, they get chased out of that town, and then they get chased out of the next town, and they get chased out of the next town. This is extremely hard work. This is work that does not provide a lot of gratification. Instantly. Conceptually, you can say, I know we're doing the right thing, but it is never, ever easy for them. Many scholars believe that when Paul, in another letter, talks about the thorn in his flesh that he's begging God to remove, it's not a literal thorn or literal flesh. It's that these Jewish leaders, highly influential leaders in society, keep chasing him from town to town, persecuting, making accusations, making his whole life a swim upstream. This is incredibly hard, relentlessly difficult work that Paul and his companions are doing. What if Demas is from Thessalonica? He's not Jewish. Well, Scripture says that he's not Jewish, he's a believer. What if instead of reading that Demas was forsaking Paul and going to Thessalonica, what if he was forsaking Paul and going back to Thessalonica? What if that was home? So you gotta pay attention. The text doesn't say that he ditched God. He ditches Paul. He leaves Paul in a lurch, and he goes out of love for the way things are, rather than how they could be, let's just leave things how they are. He goes to Thessalonica. He's no longer willing to endure the difficulty that comes with Christ. He's no longer willing to embrace the difficulty that comes with new ideas about God. I can't do this. It's cost him socially. It's cost him mentally. It's cost him intellectually. It's cost him physically, emotionally. He carries these doubts with him. This is a great idea, but man, is this true or is it mostly true? Am I getting this right? Working with Paul, if you've studied the New Testament, Paul's got an edge to him. Paul was probably difficult to live with. And so there's tension, there's persecutions, there's beatings, they're shipwrecked. It's on and on and on. He's hungry, he's thirsty. And you know what? He's homesick. And so Demas gets to a point and he goes, I can't do this anymore. I'm going home. Yeah, but what about Paul? You know what? What about Paul? I can't do it. He got himself there. I'm going home. The age to come, the kingdom of God, the way of Christ, I think all that stuff is beautiful and it's good. And man, it sounds good in a synagogue. It sounds great in church. But living this, man, it is just too hard. I just want things how they were. I miss how the ease of how things were. I'm going back to Thessalonica. We like demonizing Demas because it's easier. But Demas isn't some malevolent, exotic monster. He went back because of the subterranean brothels. It was the hookers and the money and the gambling. That's what took him away. He went to go do that. You know, the church of Satan in Thessalonica needed an organ player, and Demas said, I can play. And he went back to be the organ player, and the church said, no. Let me level the playing field a little bit between us and Demas. Let me redeem Demas's reputation a little bit. I'm Demas. You're Demas. We all come to moments and seasons and events and circumstances in our life where we say, I will not do, this is too hard. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not swimming upstream. Where's my thanks? Where's the payoff? I'm the only one that cares about these things anymore. I'm the only one that's doing the right thing. Everything is pushing against me. I don't care who I have to leave in a prison cell. This just isn't worth it anymore. I'm going out of my mind. See, you're Demas. I'm Demas. We all retreat to our personal Thessalonikas, our intellectual Thessalonikas, our theological Thessalonikas, emotional, spiritual, physical, vocational, social. We all retreat. We all have moments where we say, I don't care. I don't even care if it's better or true. I'm going to Thessalonica. We all do it. We give up on people at work. That dude, if he's at the drinking fountain, I'm going in the opposite direction. I give up. That guy is human sandpaper. I give up. We do it with disciplines. Man, I have this thing that I was going to do, this discipline, but my mind, the bottom part of my mind just keeps telling me, why don't you cheat? Why don't you cheat? Why don't you cheat? You need relief. Why don't you cheat? You know, I'm so tired of being haunted by how hard this is and how all I got to do is this, and then relief comes. I quit. I'm going back to Thessalonica. I don't want to do this anymore. And we quit. We go back. We do it with commitments. It turns out that how glorious it is to make a commitment. And then how totally not glorious it is to live that commitment out. Do you know how much more beautiful I do feels than actually doing? So we make the commitment. And then, this is no wonder you got to make vows and promises up front. Signing papers and everything. I'm going back to Thessalonica. How many people do we very casually, and it's never ourselves, it's very rarely me, it's others, we very casually rate as evil, malevolent. They're labeled as evil around our lives through history. But with a little bit of reflection, we find that what's actually going on is somebody got tired. Somebody got tired of the discomfort. Somebody got tired of living in the middle. Somebody got tired of the ambiguity. Somebody got tired of being the only one that believed what they believed. Somebody got tired of the social consequences for standing up for what's right. Somebody got tired of holding competing tensions. Somebody got tired of living others-centeredly for people who just will not reciprocate. Somebody got tired. We call them evil, but really what they were is retreating to some form of Thessalonica. Well, that's them. How about you? What are you facing right now? You found out 10 years ago. It started happening 15 years ago. You found out yesterday right after you mowed the lawn. What are you facing? It's difficult. I don't want to be glib. Look at the numbers of people in here. There's real suffering, long-term, short-term, real pain and suffering and discomfort in this room. What are you facing? Is it hard? Is it got the whole world pushing against you and things that you used to say, I'd never cut corners there. Like, I can't imagine not cutting a corner right now. This is so painful, so hard, so annoying. It's so unstable, so off balance. The ambiguity, the difficulty, the lack of support, the lack of payoff, the pain, the literal physical pain. What are you facing? Is it hard? Because I want to say this very respectful of whatever that really is going on in this room between us brothers and sisters, whatever that really is. I don't want to be flippant about the reality of that. But here's the thing. If it's hard, whatever you're facing, most of us, I'm using the word most of us in this culture, do not know the difference anymore between hard and impossible. We come up against hard and our brain says impossible. Most of us have forgotten that mountains are not walls. That a hill is not a barrier. Many of us have lost the ability to make any kind of distinction between very difficult and it just ain't going to happen. Our whole culture succeeds based on mitigating discomfort, mitigating difficulty. Technology, think about how much technology is simply meant to make your life more comfortable, easier than somebody else's, easier than your own life 1 year ago, and you don't have to wait for anything. Immediate gratification, pleasure. You are entitled to not have to feel a stinking bit of discomfort. We're passing that down to our children. What is that, a callus on your hand? You're now Bubble Boy. We can't have that. Our culture, I'm being funny, but I'm also respectful, but this is our culture. Our culture absolutely has taught us, and we are part of that teaching, that there is no difference between hard and impossible, to the extent that we don't know the difference between the hills and the mountains that are inviting us for a climb and the barriers. I got to do a Yui. This is it. This is the end of this road. That when we see difficulty, something goes off in our head and says, it's evil. It's to be avoided. What is that, pain? Or is that discomfort? No. That means it's full of death. It's full of, run. That's, our culture believes this. And we've stopped asking the question, man, do I even know when I'm feeling down or when I'm feeling hopeless, do I even know the difference between difficult and impossible? Do I even entertain that there's a difference? I want to dig in a little bit. A lot of people have speculated, especially in my profession, have speculated about Demas. So now it's my turn. What did Demas say when he got back to Thessalonica? We don't know. But we can play with it. Because here's what I don't think he said. I don't think when he got back to Thessalonica that people were like, Demas, I thought you were running with that Saul changed his name to Paul guy who was like killing Christians and then he became one. And he's like going from town to town building churches and doing, I thought you were one of him. Yes, I was. I left that Paul in a prison cell to rot and to die because it got too hard. No way. That is not how that went down. I'd never buy that. Because he's human, because we're human, here's how I think it went down. Demas, you're back. What's going on? Oh my gosh, that whole thing I was doing, that was crazy. I mean, nothing from God would be that hard. We just couldn't get that thing off the ground. It just wouldn't flow. I mean, if it's from heaven, would it really be opposed? It just, every day was uphill. Every day was against the current. Every day. Man, nothing from God would have that much pain, discomfort, difficulty. What about Paul? Paul's just being stubborn. He can get out of there as soon as he wants. I'm just being smart. It doesn't say he ditches God. He ditches Paul. And I bet he justified it because that's what we do. Because none of us like to retreat and then admit to retreating. And so our brains seem to down to our neurons, we seem to be built to justify ourselves. There's a thing called confirmation bias. When we run into a cognitive dissonance, like here's what I believe, but here's what's actually happening. How do I make this so that I'm not living in doubt, where I don't have to second guess myself? How do I give myself power by being sure, and how do I harmonize these two things? My favorite example is I apply at two colleges, and this one's better, but the second one accepts me. Which one just became better? Of course the second one's better. That's because we have a confirmation bias. We're always lying to ourselves because the last thing we want to be to ourselves is somebody that's retreated to a Thessalonica, regardless of who or what the consequences are. Man, we're good at this. We're great at this. In my line of work, I have a lot of people on my couch just talking about their life. I hear this all the time. I hear men talk about adultery this way. Yeah, Doherty, you don't understand, though. The new girl laughs at all my jokes. She respects me. I'm not sure I ever loved my wife. Then you watch on his face. That still kind of makes me the villain. I'm not sure my wife ever loved me. I think we just got married out of pressure. List all the reasons. So, I'm going to leave my children in the prison cell, and I'm taking the new girl to Thessalonica. It's for the best. We do it with diets. We do it with taking care of our bodies. This is hard. This is really hard. And you all, you got the metabolism that just no matter what you eat, it just kind of goes away. But I have to actually work. And so, you know, right now it just isn't good. The stress and the soccer practice and the work schedule and it's the end of the year or at least it's going to be in 9 months. And so we've got some things to do. And so now's not a good time. You know, 2020, that year is wide open. Now is a terrible time. And I mean, we all make promises in January. We go back to the way we used to eat and live and not move around in Thessalonica. We say we cheat systems, but we're never cheating systems. We're never defrauding a system. We're hurting people. Makes us feel better to say, oh, it's a system. No, it's people. Oh, you know how much money they make. They're not going to miss mine. Do you know how much money I've given them? I mean, truthfully, I pay their salary. So it's no big deal. Everybody does it. We wink at it. We even congratulate each other. Oh, that was cool. How'd you do that? Yeah, there's a loophole. We justify it. I'm not a thief. It's a system. We go back to Thessalonica. Justify lying. I had to lie. He can't handle the truth, literally, not just the movie quote. If I told him the truth, it'd break him. So I had to hide that and withhold certain elements. It wasn't good for him to hear the truth, and so I had to lie. Or one of my favorites, Steve, you don't understand. In my line of work, you have to lie. We all lie. We know that we're doing it. We do it with faith. We do it with church. We come and we experience a different expression of devotion, a different expression of faith and worship. We come across ideas that we were told are outside the confines of what we're allowed to believe and entertain. And we hear this and we say, okay, I'm very uncomfortable with this. And when I'm uncomfortable, that means something's wrong and it can't be me. And so rather than acting like the more noble-minded Bereans and saying, hey, let's have a discussion about this. I could have my paradigms expanded. I might have been wrong, or I could add to it. Rather than doing that, we say, no, discomfort is evil. Let's go to Thessalonica point. Go to another church. I stay home. You know what? You don't have to go to church. Organize, blah, 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 blah. Here's my church. We do it in so many different ways. But listen, following Christ means a lot of things. Following Christ at its core is about living in unresolved tension, is living in the midst of difficulty, is being a better and better son and daughter of God, regardless of what the circumstances do, regardless of how much the stream is pushing against you, that you continue to walk up it. The way of Christ means a lot of things, but at its core, it's about living in unresolved difficulties and foregoing the demand for immediate gratification, because you believe if you will continue going in even the small, not in even the smallest, in mostly the smallest ways. We wait for the big things, but the big things are few and far between. The small day-to-day things. I want the kingdom to get its roots into this. I want the kingdom to get its roots in this. It's weeks, it's months, it's years of living in the nebulous, ethereal, between world of ease and ease. In between our Thessalonicas, the kingdom grows in us continuing and continuing and continuing, so the kingdom can take root. To my brothers and sisters that are here today, and you're right in the middle of difficulty. You're living in this tension right now. You're living in the middle of ambiguity and tension and pain, physical pain. You get intellectual hang-ups with the faith. You're literally sick, and so it's making you literally sick and tired. Yet relational difficulties. Maybe there's one person in here that's got a relational tension with a family member. Maybe. I'm not sure. This old baggage. Maybe you pay a professional to help you unzip that Samsonite and really dig through so you can figure out why you get mad at stupid stuff. You're right in the middle of that. You still don't know the answers. There people that you're really threatened by new ideas. You're trying to figure out what to do with this. But some of you, you're really annoyed at old ideas. That thing is so played out and stagnant. Do we still say that? No matter what it is, there's a ton of other things. You can fill in the blanks. You're starting to feel desperate. You're starting to let relief climb up to your top priority. Your top priority used to be meaning and beauty and depth and kingdom or really having a good life. But now it's, I don't want to do this anymore with him, with them, with this idea, with this stuff, with this thing, this issue. What I really want is relief. What I really want is Thessalonica. To my brothers and sisters who they've gotten the invitation in the mail to go back to Thessalonica, I simply want to say two things. One, you got to talk to somebody. You got to talk to people that you do life with. Not just your buddies you giggle with. Those are good. I've got those. But I mean people who you have invited to say things you do not want to hear. They tell you things that hurt and you thank them for. I hope you have at least one of those. You've got to tell people that you do life with. If you've got a life group, but if you don't, you can still grab one or two others to say, hey, let's do this right. Let me tell you, as you're trying to figure out who that person is, let me tell you who it's not. They're not Thessalonians. If you're from Thessalonica, literally, this is a metaphor. I'm sorry, we love you. Sorry. Somebody got out and walked out. I was trying to say, are they Mediterranean? Sorry. They can't be Thessalonians. You'll know. Because they're the people that affirm your lowest decisions. The women, respectfully, women do this really well. Oh, girl, you should not put up with that. They don't have all the information, but they love to applaud you, and so they'll applaud whatever you decide. Let's just go to Thessalonica. Men do this too. Dude, it's fine. It's good to see you finally waking up. I've hated that chick for a year. A Thessalonian is somebody that just celebrates the lowest, easiest road. Yeah, forget about it. Who's gonna know? Forget that. Cut that corner. And what's integrity? Those aren't the people that make you better. Those are people you're supposed to be inspiring. Don't take your cues from a Thessalonian. Take cues from people that know the difference between difficult and impossible. Take cues from people that when they see a mountain, they see something to climb, not something to cower and start crying and go the other direction. None of my favorite stories have that protagonist. That's one of my challenges to you, is that you'd tell somebody. Because some of you are confused. Some of you are being abused by somebody that says they love you. And you're trying to figure out right now, am I Demas or are they? You need to talk to somebody to figure out who you are in all of this and what all of this means. You've got to talk to somebody. And maybe up to this point, you've done a really poor job of being in charge of yourself. You need to invite some co-managers. Help me. I make bad decisions. I need to talk about this, and I know you'll tell me the truth. That's the first thing. You got to tell somebody. You got to tell the right somebody. Just at least one somebody. Two, this is profound. If you're taking notes, you're going to want to write this down. Don't quit. Endurance is something in the Bible we never say, but over and over and over and over and over. It's so key to living the life that Jesus has for us. Don't quit. Do you know what Paul says two sentences before he says, Timothy, you got to get here. Demas has ditched me. Two sentences before, Paul says this in 2 Timothy. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Yada, 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 get here. Demas ditched me. But look, he didn't say I won the fight. He didn't say he won the race. He just kept fighting. Paul got knocked on his rear end every day, but he gets up, tightens up his gloves, and swings. Paul ran hard every day. But it's not about winning. Overcoming in the kingdom of God isn't about winning. You're supposed to be following Jesus. How do you win a race when you're commanded to be behind the leader? Winning in the kingdom is simply not quitting. Don't quit. All heaven is cheering you on. All your difficult decisions in the name of love and generosity and patience, the kingdom endurance, all heaven is saying, yeah, 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 don't worry about winning. Winning got done for you. Just don't quit. Get up off your rear end. Keep walking. Keep climbing. Don't quit. Don't quit. Don't quit. All heaven cheers that on. You know that? All heaven is cheering on your most difficult decisions right now insofar as they're connected to the kingdom and love and the very spirit of Jesus. Don't quit. I know Thessalonica looks good. Don't quit. Don't quit. In that spirit, as we end, I want to end today where the Bible ends, in the book of Revelation. So I want to ask you to stand. Over and over in the scriptures this comes up, but it comes up the most in Revelation. Talking to Christian men and women who are under constant oppression, constant difficulty, constant pain, constant persecution, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. Sometimes it's our convenience that's on the line. Sometimes it's just intellectual respect in a peer group to the extent that we surrender ourselves to Christ. For them, you're not allowed to say Jesus above ground, or you're going to die, or you're going to watch your kids die, or you're going to make your kids orphans. And it's getting worse, and it's getting worse, and it's getting worse. And there's a theme, there's many weird, crazy themes that come up in Revelation, but this one could not be just more right down the center. And I want to close with this today in Revelation. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I'll give the right to eat from the tree of life, which is in the paradise of God. Overcome. Revelation 2:17, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I'll give some of the hidden manna. The next slide, Revelation chapter 3, verse 5. He or she who overcomes will thus be clothed in white garments, a metaphor for purity. Don't give up. Next one. Revelation chapter 3, verse 12. He who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God. Next, Revelation chapter 3, verse 21. He who overcomes, I will grant to him to sit down with me on my throne. Don't give up. Revelation chapter 21, verse 7, after listing off the new heaven and the new earth, he says, he who overcomes will inherit these things, and I'll be his God, and he will be my son. I will be her God, and she will be my daughter. Don't quit. Don't quit. Don't quit. Don't worry about winning. Don't worry about perfection. Keep getting up. Keep walking. Keep climbing, and don't let Thessalonica in the moment seem as real as what's to come, the age to come. Demas's legacy isn't that he's a monster. It wasn't the hookers. Demas's legacy is that he quit. Don't quit. Link arms with somebody and do not quit, my dear brothers and sisters. Go in peace. We'll see you next week.